campus in Old Westbury, New York. Westbury, New York.
It's Global Media News time, live from Studio A. This is Global Media News on OWWR, Old Westbury, Web Radio. I'm Miguel Castro.
And I'm Marcy Mendonca. You're listening to Global Media News from the New Media Newsroom on OWWR, Old Westbury, Web Radio.
This week in New Media News.
Can Twitter protect Parkland teens from attacks on social media?
There is a new tool for verifying the news. Can NewsGuard tell us what's true?
What's the latest in the battle over net neutrality?
Can YouTube make you pay for music?
How many bots were watching the Oscars this year?
What is TweetDeckard? And why can you get in trouble with it with Twitter?
Which post comes first? Did Instagram switch its feed algorithm back to chronological order?
Markers are moving to augmented reality. Will it pay off?
All this and more coming up on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio, streaming live from the State University of New York College at Old Westbury. Greg Mitchell is here in Studio A with us to report on the role of social media in the wake of the mass shooting in Parkland, Florida. Greg, some of the high school students who were there have been very active on social media and are now leading a movement to end gun violence. They are using social media to call for gun control, but it seems that there are many people who are opposed to these student activists. What has been the reaction to these students on social media?
Thanks, Marcy. Social media is a good place for everybody to really get all their opinions out, but when you have a place where absolutely everybody can post what they want, you get all the reactions. So the real troubling reactions on the part of students has been a lot of conservatives and gun supporters really, instead of really supporting them or anything, they're just kind of using it to attack them. In response to this, Twitter has been pledging that they would try to protect them, which I really don't understand why they would even do it. Pledge to do so strongly. It's not as if they're really going to be able to keep up. You know, people can post something. If it's up there for, you know, 5 seconds, somebody gets a screen grab, it's aggregated, it's a story. So
do you think that Twitter has been failing to protect the Parkland students and given other critics confidence to criticize them and attack them?
Yeah, really just from what they've been able to get away with, it's really just emboldened. So you have people like Laura Ingraham, she's a Fox host. After this, she's been tweeting about one of the students, David Hogg. Right now some schools are like trying to stay away from him, I guess, for the publicity or whatever, and she's, you know, making a fuss about it, like, oh, look at this, the student can't get in because he's talking about gun control. Like, you know, obviously, you can't be doing that. I mean, she's getting, you know, torn apart by all different platforms, but just that she felt that she could do this, you know, and I don't really think that Twitter is really smart in trying to say that they can't really do anything about it.
For sure, it doesn't sound like they're doing it. Actually, what did Twitter actually do to protect the Parkland students?
Well, it almost doesn't make any sense. They verified their accounts. I mean, just from, you know, news stories or whatever, if you're going to be a public figure, they're going to verify your account. But to just go ahead and just hand in Parkland student that's a kind of account, put a checkmark there, so now everybody knows who they are. They can just, they don't even, the starting point for the criticism isn't people that they've, you know, actually seen. I mean, Emma Gonzalez aside, some of the more outspoken ones, but just that they have that little checkmark there where they just say, okay, you can find out something about your life, you can talk about it in public. You know, it's not only like Fox hosts, like Leslie Gibson, she's a main house GOP, she's calling Emma Gonzalez, you know, like a skinhead. You know, government, it's just, it's almost like.
And there are also fake images of Emma Gonzalez ripping up the Constitution, which weren't real. Did Twitter do anything to try to protect that? Because from what I understand, it was up for a while, and it was going up, going around a few different Twitter accounts, and people were actually attacking her, even though it wasn't even a good job.
Well, like I was saying before, if it's up for just any amount of time, you know, that's it. It's on the internet. You're going to see that response over and over. People keep tweeting it. And, you know, they've banned some accounts that are going to be aggressive, including the original one, but the original account was a bot, or allegedly a bot. So, I mean, I just don't see what really to do.
So you think that Twitter failed to, or is failing to protect the students?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, you know, aside from banning accounts, I don't really see what they can do. I mean, even if they have different, you know, programs that like filter keywords and stuff, I just think that's as far as they can really take it. For Golden News, Greg Mandel, back to you, Marcy.
Thanks, Greg. Kristen Brave is up next to tell us about a new startup that is creating a tool to fight against fake news. It is called NewsGuard. Kristen, who's behind this startup, and what is this tool, NewsGuard, that they say will be able to verify content and help stem the tide of fake news?
NewsGuard is founded by former journalists Stephen Brill and Gordon Kravitz. They've been journalists and in the media business for years. Stephen Brill was once a publisher of the Wall Street Journal. So NewsGuard is a new system that is going to base news on social media on a grading system, and it's going to be like green, yellow, and red signals. And then these signals are then going to have 200 to 300 word descriptions, including the background of the publication, who owns the site's history, and then their track record. And to do this, Brill and Kravitz hired analysts to research and evaluate news sites that make up 98% of media consumption in the United States. This service is going to come out in the fall, and they have sample labels on their site already. And some of these examples are for the BaltimoreSun.com. If news is from Baltimore Sun, it's going to say, the website of a news organization with a rich history, founded in 1837 as a newspaper serving the metropolitan area in and around Baltimore. And another example is for the DenverGuardian.com. It's going to say, a site that seems like a traditional newspaper site, but it's not actually associated with any newspaper or any other news-gathering organization. Stephen Brill told CBS this morning that he wants to apply common sense to a problem that algorithms haven't been able to solve. And there are questions over whether major platforms such as Google and Facebook will actually use NewsGuard, but Brill believes it's going to benefit advertising agencies because they want to keep their ads off of fake news sites, and he says that this will save them money because they won't charge these companies as much money as they would have spent on lawyers and public relations teams. And in order to avoid any type of bias, Brill gave an example of an article that would have a yellow signal. So if a news site released an article on fracking funded by the American Petroleum Institute, readers would be able to see who it's funded by, so that you wouldn't be confused where the news is coming from and if it was biased or not. And this has been such a big topic since the Russian involvement in the 2016 elections, and many other social media platforms have made efforts to stop this news.
Gotcha. So what would be an example of this filter?
One of the most well-known examples is the Denver Guardian. Back in 2016, 3 days before the election, they published an article titled "FBI Agents Suspected in Hillary Email Leaks Found Dead in Apparent Murder-Suicide," and it was posted on their website, and it was turned out that this was completely false. And people believe that the Denver Guardian is a real news site because of the other newspaper, which is the Denver Post. So they have similar names, and they tried to set it up like it would be a news site.
And what are some of the factors NewsGuard will use to determine a red, yellow, or green reading?
Some of the factors for a red label would be that it lacks basic professional standards, if it has a hidden mission. In the last 3 years, if the site has produced more than one article that has been declared false or fake by one or more nonpartisan fact-checking organizations, if they have a lack of financial disclosures, if there's any hidden advertising, if they have deceptive headlines, if there's a lack of accountability, and if there's a failure to appeal who's in charge.
How will the NewsGuard benefit advertisers?
NewsGuard, since a lot of advertisers don't want their ads shown on these fake news organizations or sites, he thinks that the co-founders think that they're helping them out because advertisers. they just want their ads on real news. They don't want to be fake or deceptive. For Global Media News, I'm Kristen Gray. Back to you, Marcy.
Thanks, Kristen. When we return, can state legislators bring back net neutrality? And can YouTube make you pay for your music? My co-host Miguel Castro is on the bot beat today. Miguel, how important were bots in the social media storm on Oscar night?
Thank you, Marcy. It's actually pretty incredible to see just how much bots were active during that night, especially since many of those bots decided to start impersonating various actors that were getting awards. So what ended up happening that night, there were several different scams done. So a bot would be on Twitter, and it would say, hey, thank you guys or fans for helping me win this award. Here's a little gift for you. So there'd be a link, and with that link, there'd be a survey, so you could win maybe a gift card or something. Many people might see this as an act of kindness by their favorite actors, giving back to them. But in reality, it was just another way to reach and get fan information, specifically email, phone number, and more other personal information. This is the first time that it's happened. It's happened with other celebrities. Currently, right now, the biggest one is the director of Get Out, specifically on Oscar night. When he won the award, he was Jordan Peele, had a million different bot accounts impersonating him and getting information from anyone else. This has happened with big name celebrities such as the President Donald Trump, as well as Elon Musk, and it isn't the first time. Specifically, the highest current situation is the fact that this one Jordan Peele fake bot account actually had an unprecedented 277,000 clicks in the first day, and not only was this set up prior to him winning, but it stayed on for like a good 5 days, and many people fell victim to it and had their information breached. This isn't the first time, of course. Ellen DeGeneres and Kim Kardashian being other ones. And there's even been recent cryptocurrency hackings with other high-profile celebrities where they state that, hey, they'll be willing to trade cryptocurrency for other cryptocurrency. But many people end up actually losing investments and money through that. And it's very serious. And I actually decided to go more into it with the whole celebrity bot and Twitter bot scandal, and actually decided to go hands-on and see just how hard or easy it was to make a bot.
So you got involved for the story. What exactly did you do?
So while I was researching it, I wanted to see just how easy it was to make a bot. So I don't have any programming experience. I don't have any previous experience with any Linux or Ubuntu software. So I just went off scratch and I downloaded Linux on my computer, as well as Ubuntu, which is an easier program. I didn't know a single thing I could do, but I looked up online and I looked up some scripts. So for those who don't know, scripts are just programming codes that are already set. I basically just copy and pasted them, and I could get very close to a functioning bot. So it's very scary to think that me, as someone who doesn't know much, could make his own bot.
So this wasn't difficult?
It wasn't. I was actually very surprised because I thought that programming and doing automatic things would be something for like hackers or like big name computer scientists, but getting my hands dirty and just giving it a good 2 hours of not even learning, just copying and pasting, it did a lot. I was stunned.
So it could just be just like everyday people, like anyone with internet access, basically, who wants to try to scam people can just research it and pretty much.
Yeah, for sure. If anyone, I'm guessing that if someone might be targeting someone or if someone might have a specific purpose, they could take 2 or 3 hours out of their day and just specifically aim things towards them, maybe mislead them and get their information. It's a very serious privacy issue.
Scary to think about. So what's your verdict on bots?
It's the process to make bots is way too easy. And the fact that it's been such a problem for Twitter
has to be regulated a little bit better, because even though there are a good amount of Twitter blockings and bannings of accounts of bots, there are more bots being made at the moment in one day than they can block, and it leading to at least more than 100,000 bots daily are remaining, and pummel them up with months and months, and you get quite a big population of Twitter users that aren't users, bots.
Wow, so that's scary. So thanks for sharing that with us. Hopefully everyone will be a little bit more careful when they're using Twitter.
Thank you. From Golden Internet News, I'm Miguel Casher. Back to you, Mike.
Thanks, Miguel. James Lardizzoni is here with a story about Twitter suspending accounts for breaking the rules. James, what type of account is being suspended, and why are they being suspended?
Well, the type of accounts that are being suspended are tweet-decking accounts and accounts that have tweeted threats of violence, swear words, or triggering words that can promote either, like, suicide or self-harm. Some people might not actually know what tweet-decking is, but it's, like, when a Twitter user uses, like, a third-party application, more specifically the application TweetDeck. And what it does is it likes, retweets, or sends out the same exact tweet from multiple accounts. This counts as, like, spam upon like, the Twitter rules, and they actually just updated their rules, like, a couple of months ago, actually. And another thing is that they also get paid for so doing that kind of stuff, so they make, like, a business out of their Twitter accounts, since these accounts actually have, like, a lot of followers and everything. Like, the most famous, like, tweet-decking accounts are at Dory, at Common White Girl, at Girl Posts, and, like, there are some more. I don't know if you've actually seen them on your timeline. I don't know if you're, like, on Twitter, but you've probably seen people, like, retweet them, or you even follow them, maybe, or so. It's also a part of, like, Twitter's policy that they don't allow users to purchase or attempt to artificially inflate account interactions. So, basically, it's just really against the Twitter policy for these accounts to actually make money, to actually tweet something or retweet something. And what's crazy is, like, these accounts have made, like, hundreds and thousands of dollars, like, a week or even, like, monthly by doing this.
So what exactly is it that these accounts are tweeting? Can you give us an example?
Well, these accounts are basically tweeting out tweets that become viral, like funny videos or retweeting stuff that will basically make people laugh or relate to something. These people are basically stealing other people's original tweets and tweet it out on their accounts, because basically most people have, like, a normal Twitter account with not a lot of followers. Maybe they don't get that many retweets or so, and maybe if they tweet something that, like, that can possibly go viral, it won't go so much viral, but, like, since this account will steal their tweet, they'll get more retweets, get more likes, and they'll even gain, like, followers. So they basically just steal the same tweet just because they have a lot more retweets or likes, and just really the followers that you're still gaining too. So.
Can you give us an example of one of the tweets that these tweet-decking accounts got suspended for?
Yeah. One of these is actually from the @Dory account on Twitter. They tweeted, all Chrissy Teigen and John Legend do is love each other, and that's really all I want in life, LMAO. That's what they tweeted. And then a person wrote, being like, they want Chrissy Teigen to actually see this tweet because it's so funny and, like, so, like, relatable, like, you know. So Chrissy Teigen actually responded to that tweet that fan tweeted and said, like, oh, like, she's not going to retweet this because she saw the original tweet. Like, this account, like, stole, like, a very nice tweet that, like, that didn't blow up, but it blew up on the Dory account, so.
And since accounts are being suspended for triggering words or phrases, what are some of those words and phrases that people are being suspended for?
Well, some triggering words are, like, are killing myself, suicide, I want to die, hang myself, and, like, there are still a lot more others. But also, like, I feel like people are also getting suspended for, like, using that stuff, but they aren't, like, really promoting self-harm or so, like, you know, it's like, oh, like, a celebrity did something, be like, oh my god, like, I want to kill myself because they just did that, like, you know, like, they don't actually mean it, but, like, they, it's like a scam Twitter kind of thing. So Twitter is actually sending out like emails now to people being like, okay, you need to delete this tweet because it promotes self-harm or suicide or so. And then they get suspended because of that tweet. But the suspension might not be permanent. Like, it might be temporary for a few hours, a few weeks or so. So
do they actually, let them know before they get suspended and give them a chance to delete the tweet, or they just...
No, they actually just suspend them because of that tweet. And then they give them, like, a time frame of really... how long you'll be suspended, but you have to delete the tweet first,
okay.
And then after, and then the countdown will begin. So, yep. And then for Global Media News, I am James Artizoni. Back to you, Marcy.
Thanks, James. In a minute, what is Instagram doing to its feed, and is augmented reality the future of marketing?
Keisha Foster knows Instagram. Keisha, what is the latest news about what Instagram is doing to its feed? How is the feed changing, and why is Instagram doing this?
Instagram is also best known for pictures and hashtag this, hashtag that. And hashtags normally would get you instant likes, followers, and popularity rather quickly. But currently, Instagram is, well, they were talking about the possibility of changing their current algorithm to back to the chronological order. So there were a lot of articles that I did see out there that said, oh, Instagram's going to change their feed back to chronological order, when in fact, they're not. And they actually said it publicly. According to an article in Digital Trends, there was a discussion about reverting back to the original way that Instagram allowed the users to post, but they did publicly state that they will not be going back to chronological order. There's even a petition out there. Only has about 27,000, people that signed it, stating, like, we want Instagram to go back to its chronological order. They said that their short-term goal right now is at least get it to 35,000, but that's a relatively small number compared to how many people actually use Instagram, you know what I mean? Also, in addition to that, there are multiple factors that determine, like, whether your post will be seen first. And allegedly, some of the content creators on Instagram, it was, like, mentioned that Instagram will show your posts to about 10% of your followers, and if you receive a lot of interaction, likes, comments, like in between, within that 10-minute time span, then they'll show it to the rest of the 90%, which is ridiculous. They also say that timeliness is also factored into the algorithm as well, but really, I would say that you have to kind of work for the algorithm to get better, which means that you have to interact with your followers. I mean, I've noticed personally myself that if you literally just make a post and you hashtag, it's no longer effective like it used to be. You have to literally click on one of the hashtags. I was told, click on one of the hashtags that you have in your thing and then go like and comment on people's things. And not comment with just emojis only. Like, comment with, like, real engagement. Because that's the only way to get real engagement back. So, I guess, like, with all this, we're, like, wondering, like, what is possibly next for Instagram. But I guess they are also saying that Instagram's going to offer a new option now that's called newer posts. So, once this button is pressed, then the newer posts will obviously be more likely to appear than the old ones. And even though that's not a total reversion back to the old feed of chronological order, I guess it kind of gives... Instagram feels like it gives, you know, us, the users, more control over what we see and when it appears. And then an interesting fact also is Instagram allegedly claims that before, only 70% of the posts were 70% of the posts were unseen when it was in chronological order, which I don't understand. I guess all in all, the best advice would be to just make the best out of the app as you can and just follow those rules of interacting with people in order to get engagement back.
For sure. It kind of sounds like they're making it work for likes.
Yeah, literally. That's basically what it's becoming. Yeah.
Makes sense. Actually, why did Instagram make its decision to change the chronological order of the feed?
They made the decision to change the feed because they said that 70% of the posts were unseen because of the chronological order format, which I really don't understand how that makes sense, but that's allegedly what they said.
So does time play a factor in when you should post now?
See, I've seen a lot of back and forth with this. Timeliness does play a factor, but then it doesn't, because based off my own experience, I've tried, because I have a business account for Instagram, so I can see my insights and impressions, and I can see when they suggest that I add a post. But in actual reality, I haven't seen any significant, like, number changes because I followed their format. I literally post whenever I feel like it. But one thing I can do to guarantee that I'll get interaction back is go comment on other people's pictures. Go like their stuff as well. There's actually something called, like, I don't know, group pods, where basically a whole bunch of, like, curators will be in a group chat on Instagram, and they will, anytime there's a new post, they'll say new post, and then their job, whoever's in the group chat, they each comment and like on each other's photos so that they're consistently getting, you know, keeping the algorithm going so that they don't have to depend so much on their own followers to comment and like their stuff.
That's good to hear. Thanks,
yeah.
Asia.
For Global Media News, I'm Asia Foster. Back to you, Marcy.
Thanks, Asia. Marcy Hola has some marketing news for us today. She's been noticing that marketers are jumping into augmented reality. Why are marketers so enthusiastic about augmented reality as a marketing tool?
I think a lot of people are getting into augmented reality because it's really helping their marketing skills and advertising skills. So it gives advertisers and marketers an opportunity to create innovative campaigns that are bringing you into the digital and real world at the same time. So I think augmented reality is popular with a lot of consumers now, from young children playing video games all the way up to adults food shopping and using it at the food store. Anyone with a smartphone basically can figure out how to use augmented reality. So a few things that it does for us and how it helps marketing would be it gives you a three-dimensional way of thinking, and it makes viewers see what's ahead of them and what product they're buying or what they want to look into. It gives them a clear visual of what they're seeing, and it's a way of primary storytelling for marketers, and it brings consumers the experience. So it also kind of extends live experiences with the consumers and what they're experiencing. So it brings real life without taking away your experience. And it also puts you in an e-commerce setting. So, for example, say you're in the grocery store and you start a new diet and you put on your augmented reality glasses, you'll walk down the aisle and it'll automatically show you what ingredients you need or what you need to start your diet or what you want to buy at the store. So it also is a creative social media tool for people, so you could use augmented reality to implement it into your current social media tactics. So like adding creative filters, animations, and interactions to everyday objects or products. So augmented reality can be a great way to take video strategies to the next level. And it just makes marketing, it's the number one seller for marketing nowadays. Most people don't use it, but they're starting to because you could sell your product without even talking or showing anyone anything yourself, basically.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, I wanted to ask you, what are some examples of how augmented reality can be used for marketing?
Well, all right, an example I would say is, like, car companies like Jaguar and BMW are experimenting with, they call it smart windshields. So it helps eliminate blind spots in the car, and it displays information in front of you that you might miss with your own eyes that you can't already see. So, I mean, that's a good example. Or if you're, say you want to redo your house or something and you want to go into a store, and when you're in the store, you can have your goggles on and it's a picture of your house and then what it'll look like with the things that you're buying.
And who's using augmented reality? Is there a specific age for it, or does it just depend on what you're using it for?
I don't think there's a specific age, but I think that it depends what business you're in. I mean, I think it could be useful for any type of business that you're in, whether you're a real estate agent, a construction worker, it doesn't really matter. And any age, you could use it for school if you're younger, or any type of marketing. And I think having commercials on TV, you see a lot more of it now because people are more aware of it. And even like on Snapchat, you're using it every day, using your Snapchat filters, and you might not even realize it.
So it's not just a VR thing. It's incorporated into
everyday life, and I think Snapchat is probably the best example because a lot of people use that, and it's easy, and you're using augmented reality right there without even realizing that it's augmented reality.
Interesting. Thank you, Marissa.
You're welcome. For Global Media News, I'm Marissa Ebola. Back to you, Marissa.
Thanks, Marissa, and thanks to Miguel Castro for hosting with me this week. Thanks to Ricardo Morales and Nikita Hines-Lundy for producing our show today.
Today we heard reports from Kristen Brave, Miguel Castro, Marissa Ebola, Aisha Foster, Joseph Feynman, Shane Florizoni, Greg Mandel, and Marcy Mendonca.
Global Media News is brought to you by OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio and the Media Communications Department here at the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest posts on the Catalyst at oldwestburycatalyst.org. Where you can listen to all of our webcasts and even subscribe to our podcast feed.
Follow us on Twitter at OWWRDMN. Use our Twitter feed to keep up with the latest news for aspiring journalists and media professionals. That's at OWWRDMN.
Stay tuned for great programming coming up next on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio.